Welcome to our show, Holding Ground. My name is Laura Richer. I'm a psychotherapist and the owner of Anchorlight Therapy Collective in Seattle, Washington. Each week, I'm joined by another therapist from the Anchorlight team to tackle important topics in mental health and psychotherapy. Our goal is to promote well-being by normalizing mental health challenges. We are here holding ground for you every Tuesday morning at 9:30 a.m. on KKNW. Good morning. Welcome to Holding Ground. My name is Laura Richer. I am the founder of Anchorlight Therapy Collective in Seattle, Washington. And today I am joined by my co-host, Michelle Mooney. Michelle is a licensed trauma and couples therapist at Anchorlight Therapy Collective. And we are here every Tuesday on 1150 AM radio. And you can also find us anytime at the KKNW website or just search Holding Ground wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. So good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Laura, and good morning to our listeners. We appreciate you. Just a reminder, Laura, you're talking about past episodes. You can find those all on our website, anchorlighttherapy.com. We also have really good written content in our blogs. And then also, if you are interested in connecting with a therapist, you can see who we might have available and schedule a complimentary consultation. So this is the second part of our series on fear of abandonment versus fear of engulfment, part two, and the final part. So to recap, in our first episode, we talked about what the fear of abandonment is, what the fear of engulfment is, how it presents and where it can all come from. So today we're first going to talk about how people who struggle with these things try to protect themselves through some dysfunctional actions. And these things are meant to intentionally push the other person away. Sometimes can look like this self-fulfilling prophecy or, oh, I'm never going to make it in a relationship. So then we like inadvertently do things, right, to like confirm that thought we have about ourselves. But really, these self-sabotaging behaviors work for people who have the fear of abandonment and, you know, their fear of loss of the relationship and then fear of engulfment, right? People who fear getting too close. So Laura, what are some of these relationship sabotaging actions?
So some of the things that someone might do unconsciously, they might not even realize that they're doing it and that they're sabotaging their relationship is, first of all, they might just have really unrealistic expectations. So they might feel like somehow the relationship is not valuable or is not serving them well if they don't feel amazing in it all the time. So maybe I'm in a relationship and I have feelings of anxiety coming up and I feel like, well, if the relationship was good, I certainly wouldn't have any of these feelings. Also, maybe unrealistic expectations around what somebody's going to, who's in a close relationship, would do for you. So maybe you expect them to answer your text 1 second after you send it, or you expect them to be available to you at all times, or maybe you expect that they're not going to have any emotional needs and you feel overwhelmed when they do. You have unrealistic expectations in some way.
Absolutely.
So then with that, you might act out in certain ways. And one of those things might be by intentionally starting arguments, picking fights with somebody. And I would say, what do you think about this, Michelle? I don't think people go, hey, you know what? I'm going to pick a fight with my partner just for funsies today. I think it more is they feel agitated. And so they're looking for a reason to make sense of that feeling. And they might start conflict.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, the truth is often we're combating the emotions that we're having in the moment. Like, I don't like this feeling, right? So I'm going to keep attacking my partner because of it. And yeah, so intentionally starting arguments, right, is intentionally trying to create chaos and push that person away. And yeah, nobody's like, oh, you know what? I want to have a fight today, but yeah, these things can happen. And sometimes, you know, couples, whether they have these fears or not, can start arguments. If things aren't going well, sometimes they'll start arguments just so they're connecting on some level. Right. And that's, you know, of course, we don't want to get to that point. Or people can have this idea of like, oh, if we're arguing, at least we have passion in our relationship. So there's all these reasons why that people will intentionally start these arguments, which of course are dysfunctional, right? It's not actually functioning in the way that we hope it would be.
No, it's definitely going to be sabotaging. And then the other side of that is someone might not address anything negative. So they might avoid any sort of conflict. They might be unwilling to express anything that they feel might be received as being too needy or too anything. And they might just try to push away all negative emotion and for fear of losing the relationship. And what that's going to do is you're creating an obstacle for your partner being able to really know you. You're kind of putting on a facade to show up for the relationship. You're not mm-hmm. bringing your whole self to the relationship, which sometimes people don't feel safe to bring their whole self to the relationship because they feel like they will be rejected. So they want to just stay on a superficial level and just keep everything super positive, which we love positive, but you know, if to really know someone, you know all sides of them.
If you feel like you have to hide yourself or hide what's going on for yourself to maintain a relationship, you know, that we don't want to get to that place, right? You want to be in a relationship with somebody you feel safe with showing your authentic self to. And then that way they get to love those parts about you, right? We need to talk about emotions. I see that a lot in couples, like, well, what's the point of talking about our emotions? It's like, no, that is the thing we need to talk about the most often because they inform our behavior. And narratives we tell ourselves, etc. So suppressing negative things, oh man, I mean, it comes out at some point too. So
yes, it's going to come out at some point. And so that's a great thing to point out, Michelle. It's you're not going to suppress it forever. And then it's going to come out in the most like inopportune, least desirable time and place in a way that you regret versus just addressing things in real time. So, but somebody who has a lot of anxiety around relationships might not want to address negative things. Another thing that will be sabotaging is somebody who has paranoia about their relationship. So because they have a fear that something negative is going to happen, that they're going to be rejected or abandoned, or overwhelmed by the relationship, they're constantly looking for proof that that is true. And we will find whatever we're looking for. So if we expect to be rejected, we're going to see signs of rejection everywhere, even if that really isn't the intent of the other person. So again, things that, you know, oh, you didn't invite me out with your friends. That must mean that you don't love me, or, you know, you didn't return my text. You clearly are having an affair. So going into very extreme stories around kind of normal behaviors.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Perfect point is that we tend to look for these, confirmation bias. Oh, huh, see, there is that thing, right? There is that, you know, you were 5 minutes late, so you must be having that affair, or you changed your clothes at the gym, you know, why are you, you know, hiding your work shirts, right? You know, all that kind of stuff, right? Lipstick around the collar. So, you know, people, yeah, exactly. People can really engage in these fears and then not then the sabotaging part is not just having the fears, but then, right, the accusations to the partner that come along with that, right? We're not going to want to stick with that person if that's all we're hearing all the time.
Exactly. And another way that people, I would see people more who are avoidant or fear engulfment, they might be very critical of their partners. They might start to look for all of the reasons why there is something wrong with them. And in reality, that could just be rooted in a fear of them getting too close. And so that's a way to keep somebody at a distance to kind of start to pick them apart and criticize them. Also, another way to keep somebody at a distance is engaging in other unhealthy behaviors. So maybe you're doing things that would be detrimental to the relationship, using substances, overworking to maybe avoid the relationship, maybe spying on your partner, going through their phone, doing things that are going to cause mistrust or anxiety in the relationship. What else, Michelle? Any other unhealthy behaviors you can think of that might show up when somebody's trying to push somebody away because they're afraid of intimacy?
Kind of related to the one you just said earlier about the criticism, right? Pushing the partner away is also holding grudges, right? If we're holding these grudges and constantly bringing them up to our partner, or you know, because we have the grudge, we're going to withhold affection or whatever it might be to push that person away. So it's the same thing, right? So holding grudges is another one. I wanted to go to my parents' house for Christmas, but instead we went to yours, and then you latch on to that for 10 years.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, that one time, and really hanging on to these things. And then, we talk about in couples therapy, positive perspective, right? Well, what about all the things that go right? Keep a record of that in your mind or write it down and get to this place where you're also holding space in your brain for, the good stuff too. So, this next one is, something that we see often in people who do have the fear of engulfment, but also fear of abandonment, that can show up is putting energy into everything else except for your relationship. So working those extra hours, right? There can be spending too much time, you know, in your social circle if you're not also spreading that energy to your relationship, just kind of not nurturing it. And, you know, the first things we put in front of our relationship, right, it's just going to make us lose the relationship. So anything that goes ahead of that relationship, right, you're prioritizing that. And, you know, you could lose some of those things if you're not paying attention to your relationship as well. So things to keep in mind in terms of, you know, spreading out your energy. If you do want to be in the relationship, spread out your time and energy and invest in it, because otherwise it's going to die. And, you know, that's why it's self-sabotaging.
Yeah. And I think that this is something that comes up for people either who are, it could be anxious too, but more avoidant of relationships, or also people who have been in longer term relationships and they've come up against some challenges that they can't, maybe that are harder to work through, or life just becomes really stressful. You have kids, you have a full-time job. There's different obstacles that come in life that take a lot of energy. And then they're deprioritizing their relationship all the time. And like you said, you're going to get out of anything what you put into it. And if you have put your relationship at the bottom of the list, it's going to be hard to maintain closeness and intimacy.
One other thing I want to say about that real quick, and not super applicable to the abandonment or the engulfment piece, it can be. So another one is not following our words and actions. So really letting down our partner consistently is another way that we can push them away. You know, failing to, you know, show up on time, or, you know, you said you were gonna pick me up and you never did, and I had to take my own ride to the date, or, you know, whatever it might be, where we're just not making ourselves very dependable, where we might be lying to push the other person away.
Yes. And I think this can happen in some little things too that people don't think of, you know, like it might be really significant if you didn't remember to pick me up from the airport, but I also might start feeling a lack of trust from somebody if they just were unreliable. Like you said, you were going to be here 20 minutes ago and you're consistently late for me, or you said that you were going to make sure that the garage was clean and it isn't. I mean, there could be small things where people, if I feel like I can't rely on you, there is some kind of distance that's being created there, even in the mundane things. So that's always something to kind of be aware of. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing I think is creating jealousy in the relationship. So whether you're engaging in behaviors that are going to make your partner jealous in order to push them away, maybe bringing up ex-boyfriends or girlfriends, or maybe flirting with people in public, or things that you know are going to make them feel insecure, or on the flip side, accusing them of doing those things, that they are interested in other people or exes, or that their behavior is inappropriate, and focusing on and becoming jealous of that. But all of that is going to be toxic in relationships and make it hard to be close, because you're, again, creating circumstances where there isn't trust. So what can someone do? I mean, this stuff shows up all the time in therapy, right, Michelle? We hear these things all the time from people who are struggling in their relationships. What can someone do if they identify with having these fears, or knowing that they're unintentionally or even intentionally sometimes engaging in these behaviors?
Right. And people who are, you know, have these fears of abandonment or engulfment, right, there's a lot that, you know, brought them to that place. So they might decide for themselves, like, well, this is just the way I am and it's never going to get better. But the truth is no, you can heal these old things in adulthood and have successful connections with other people. So there's a few steps that folks can take. And the first one is, you know, looking at your past, thinking about the messages you received from family or past partners or teachers that really could have made you have these fears. We talked in our last episode of where these things come from, and actions that our parents maybe took that either made us feel fear of abandonment or fear of engulfment. You know, thinking about these messages, thinking about what were the messages you should have received about yourself and should have received about safety and relationships and successful connection, because there's pieces missing, right, that could have made things so you don't have these fears.
So what do you think that would look like? You know, a few examples that I can think of are, I've had clients in the past where they saw a parent being really reliant on partners and very emotionally unstable because of relationships. And so they said, wow, I don't want to be like that. I'm going to be I'm not going to need anyone for anything. I am, you know, I'm an island. And that can send that kind of message that makes somebody fearful to really engage in a close, intimate relationship because they associate kind of falling apart or not functioning well if you're dependent on other people. Or the opposite could be, you know, the message that you should be self-reliant, that you don't want to let people too close to you because maybe you didn't experience closeness with your caretakers or your parents. And so maybe it even feels unfamiliar or unsafe to you.
Right, exactly. So thinking about those things, looking at your past and thinking like, huh, is that all valuable information that I learned? And maybe it's not, right? So what are some new things that we can learn? Where's the truth, you know, versus what we were told? The other thing is, you know, when you do get to a place where you feel like, okay, I do want a relationship, I'm going to put myself back out there, remembering uncertainty is, you know, there's no guarantee in life. So accepting the fact that there's going to be uncertainty. I mean, relationships, you're dealing with another human, right? And there's a lot of nuance in all of us that, you know, we can't just heal ourselves and expect things to go perfectly if we, you know, unfortunately end up with somebody who doesn't also have healthy qualities. So just kind of accepting like, yeah, I might not get it right the first time or handful of times, but there is the really, you know, a good relationship maybe waiting for me out there.
And I also want to point out with that the process of learning how to accept that and feeling confident and secure within yourself is not easy. That if you have had a lot of relationship trauma or attachment wounds going back to childhood, your nervous system is going to become very dysregulated in these kinds of situations. You might experience extreme like fight or flight or freeze type responses to some of your relationship dynamics. But these are all things that you could work through in therapy, whether it's you want to address some of these things in your own individual therapy or while you're in a relationship. So while it is true that we want to get to a place of accepting uncertainty, and that's true in everything, right? In life is uncertain all the way around. But you know, I just want to let people know that's not a place that people come to easily all the time. Do you agree with that, Michelle?
Oh yeah, totally. Like the other work needs to be done, and hopefully we get to a place where, okay, ready to get back out there if you do want to have a relationship. But yeah, a lot of work has to happen before we're in a place of being like, oh yeah, that was, you know, that's just life. We have some other things to fine tune first before maybe we can accept that. So another one is expressing self-compassion. So it's really getting to a place where you accept your own value, because when these things can happen, we might not feel like we have much value maybe don't have much value in a relationship. So once you really get to know that for yourself and really accept your value and worth, then you'll know rejection won't feel as crushing if it happens again, because you do have, you know, there is these good parts of you, and maybe that person just didn't see it, but you know, that doesn't feel as harsh anymore once we know our own value.
Yeah. And I think that it doesn't negate the fact that when we're disappointed in relationship or something, it doesn't go the way that we wanted it to, that it's going to be painful no matter what. But that when you feel more secure within yourself and you have established some good coping skills and you have some different ways of reframing different experiences, you don't go straight to, oh my gosh, I'm such a loser. I should have known it was never going to work out. But instead you can go, hey, I had this experience. Maybe I'm disappointed, but you know, I'm going to pick myself back up and move forward. It's a very different, you can engage in different ways in relationships in a more meaningful way.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's hard not to take it personally if we get rejected. So, you know, and anytime a relationship does end and we did find value in it, there's going to be a grieving process. But, you know, like you're saying, we don't have to go straight to the mindset of like, well, you know, this was all my fault. It's because I'm bad or unlovable or whatever it is. So right. Hopefully we can get to that compassion piece.
Yeah.
And this is kind of related, this tuning into your own inner dialogue. So instead of, you know, accepting self-criticism, try to catch yourself in these negative self judgments that you might have. Again, these like beliefs of, you know, I'm never going to make it in a relationship, or gosh, relationships are so consuming and dangerous in that way. Really start to tune into that and challenge it a little bit. So things we can do with thoughts like this, or thoughts in general, is, you know, comparing what is the evidence for you actually, let's say, being unlovable, versus also what's the evidence against that, right? What are the things where that show you in life that you are lovable? Is this a reaction feeling, or you know, is it a fact? I'm sorry, is it like a reaction emotion kind of experience, or is it a fact? Right? Is it a fact that I'm unlovable, or, you know, is this kind of like a feeling that I'm unlovable right now, but it doesn't mean it's actually true. And kind of like, also, is this black or white thinking? So is it all or nothing, right? Is it, well, here's another relationship that failed, I'm never going to be lovable again, or no one's ever going to accept me. So it's not one or the other. Again, humans, relationships, there's a lot of nuance. So I'm trying to really challenge these critical thoughts if they come up.
Yes, that is always a very good practice, to notice what you're believing in the moment. And then when these things happen, give yourself some time. I mean, you're going to have some setbacks when it comes to, if you have some challenges around and some fears around intimacy, that it's not necessarily going to be easy. It is going to be worthwhile, because as humans, we want to have meaningful connections with other humans. But if you have setbacks, if you can't do it perfectly, if you're reactive or run away, give yourself some grace and compassion.
Right. Again, this isn't, you know, okay, I had struggles before, and now everything's going to be perfect, right? Granting yourself that forgiveness, and that it will take time, and it's okay if we stumble. The last one is probably know what we're going to say is therapy. So therapy can really help us cultivate this like stable, holistic self-identity, along with giving us the capacity to realistically accept our own strengths and our own flaws. So there, and you know, just really, where does this come from? Why am I doing this? Can be so valuable to know that. And then really working on getting to a place, right, where you maybe can find love if you do want to do that. So Laura, once we do feel safe in a relationship and we have done this work, what are some possible improvements that we will see? What will we notice in ourselves if we did the work?
So I think once you feel more secure within yourself, you can identify what you need in a relationship. You can feel secure in knowing that you have value, and that you can advocate for what you want needed in a relationship. You're going to feel less fearful around relationships, because you will feel worthy of being in relationships. And then even if you have disappointments, or even if some of those fears come up, or those negative feelings, it doesn't feel like a life or death situation. There is a sense of resiliency around it. There's a sense that I can engage in relationships. There's no guarantee that they're going to be what I want them to be, or that they're going to meet my needs, but it's worth taking the risk, because I do want that sort of connection.
And like how we deal with that, you know, disappointment. So, you know, avoiding going into self-sabotaging behaviors for ourselves. So if a relationship is really difficult when it ends, we are in that grieving process. Hopefully when we do all this good work on ourselves, we're not immediately going to unhealthy coping mechanisms, whatever that might be. Just kind of, our emotions are too hard, we're going to squash these or run from these or try to fight them off in an unhealthy way. We won't maybe, or hopefully lessen that urge to maybe engage in things that are not helpful coping.
Yes.
So what's something else that we might notice after we do this work, Laura?
I think you might notice that you have better boundaries, that you know how to talk about your feelings, that you know what to expect in relationships, so that you can have more connected, satisfying, happy relationships. You'll just feel more positive in your relationships. And you'll also have realistic expectations. I think when people are traumatized or they have fears around intimacy, they perceive healthy relationship interactions as boring or unsafe or insecure in some sort of way. And I think that shifts once you do some of this kind of work and you know how to have healthy boundaries in relationships and what to expect of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So the last thing we are going to talk about is what you can do if you're in a relationship with somebody that you're identifying, like, do they have a fear of abandonment? What's going on? There's some self-sabotaging behaviors. They're really like creating all this distance, but I think they want to be with me. So what can, we're going to talk about next, what we can do if we're in a relationship with a person like this. So, if you want to stick it out and they are committed to healing, right, you can support them as they're on their healing journey. You can set a boundary if you're in a relationship with somebody like this that you know, I really need you to kind of do some of your own work so we can get to a good place as a couple. So encouraging that growth. If they're doing the work, trying to practice patience as they are healing, you know, just like for ourselves, for our partners, right, there can be some setbacks and it's perfectly normal and to be expected as long as they're accountable for it, right? We want to have that piece too, like, oh gosh, I did the thing again, right? I'm so sorry. I'm working on this. I promise, you know, maybe I won't have these behaviors soon. You know, having that accountability for setbacks we hopefully are seeing in this person. We want to, if they're healing, right, and you know they're healing these old wounds, we want to create safety and trust in the relationship so your partner can become more vulnerable with you and share where some of this stuff comes from. Regardless of his childhood relationships, bullying, whatever it might be, you know, we want to create a really safe place for them and where they can trust us in the relationship. When these things happen, let's say some sort of reactive behavior, they're triggered in some sort of way, it's very hard to do this, but try not to react or take it personally with anger as they're, you know, they're, they might be, again, it might look like they're trying to push you away, but if they're committed to this work in you, right, they can get past this. And so they're going to, again, make some missteps. Try not to take those personally or react to them. And the last thing is try not to assume the way this partner likes to be loved. So for example, your partner has a fear of engulfment and you suddenly surprise them with, we're going to go on this vacation and I planned it all out. And, you know, maybe that person doesn't want to just be swept away on a vacation. Maybe this, you know, this has happened a lot to them growing up, for example, that these decisions are being made in whatever context and they don't have any contribution. They don't have choice. So we want to make sure that we involve our partner in the end thing so they can, you know, have, again, a say. They feel like they're invited to the table to make these decisions. We don't want to just make assumptions around the fact that around how they might want to be loved.
I think that is all such good feedback, Michelle. Great tips. And I also want to just interject here and say, sometimes people just are not in a good space to be in a relationship. So I think the really key thing that, Michelle, that you said in all of this is if they are aware of what's happening and they are committed to doing the work to improve the relationship, to work together with you, to have a good relationship. If you're with someone who has a really intense fear of intimacy, and because of that, they are not able to show up for the relationship or to meet any of your emotional needs, it's also okay to recognize that this might not be a fit or a good time for this particular person.
Right. Exactly. Reflect on that. Is this the right relationship for me? Because you have the choice to leave if you need to.
Yeah, I do. I have clients sometimes who will be like, well, I know there's all of these things that are happening, but this person had a really traumatic childhood and, you know, I don't want to abandon them. And I think in the future they have the potential of being a good person. And all of that could be true. And if they're not aware of what is happening, or if they need to do their own personal work to be able to move forward in their life, and they're not ready to do that, there's nothing you as a partner are probably going to do to shift that. So it really has to be both people invested in the process.
Yeah, because if you're sticking with somebody because, gosh, I don't want to trigger the own wounds. I mean, yes, we don't want to do that. But if you are managing your own behavior to manage their emotions, right, if you're changing your behavior just to make sure that they're okay, now you're abandoning yourself.
Yeah.
So you're not trying to abandon them, but now you're abandoning yourself. And exactly. So, yeah, so... And asking yourself, if you are in one of these relationships and you don't want to leave, like, okay, what's going on for me, right? What's some of my stuff that's making me feel like, okay, I should stay in a relationship that I'm not getting anything out of?
Right. Yeah. Oh my gosh, Michelle, all good stuff. I can't believe we're out of time for today.
That did go fast. Hopefully no one feels now that we're ending the relationship or the episode that we are abandoning them, because we will be back next week with some fresh content and a new episode.
Yes. So please tune in next week for some more Holding Ground. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to Holding Ground. You can hear us here every Tuesday morning at 9:30 a.m. on KKNW. I'm Laura Richard, Anchor Light Therapy Collective.
Find us online at anchorlighttherapy.com.
And we'll see you next week.